Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast. Each episode, we'll talk tools, techniques, and stories with the experts in open source intelligence and social engineering. This episode is brought to you by Compass CyberGuard. For a quote on your pen testing or social engineering test needs, send email to info@layer8podcast.org. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. Hey, we're back and we got another awesome guest for you. Today we have Dylan the Magician. Welcome, Dylan.
Thank you for having me. This is one of my regular listens.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Thank you so much. Hey, for the benefit of our listeners, can you talk a little bit about who you are?
Yeah. Like you said, I'm the Magician. I got my start doing risk assessments after a stint in IT and help desk work. So I had that background. Got picked up by a small company called Gold Sky. They're still around, but I don't know what they're up to. I'm not there anymore. And they gave me the opportunity to do actual security work. I did physical security risk assessment. I did network risk assessment. And they let me stretch my legs a little bit and try social engineering.
That sounds really awesome. And now you also refer to yourself, or maybe you got this name from somewhere else, as Dylan the Magician. Is there any kind of story or anything else behind the reason why you are called the Magician?
So one of my engagements with Gold Sky was the reason I got my name, and I love it and I embraced it wholeheartedly. I actually don't do any magic, which is really funny. To set the stage on this story, I had just started with them. I was maybe 2 or 3 months into my career with them, and I had done just a few things, and it was all strictly technical. So I hadn't done any social engineering engagements. And I had just pivoted from IT, so I was very technical. And I had read books on social engineering, but I never really got to do it. It's not one of those things where you can kind of just decide to do one morning. It just sort of happens. I had just started with them, and I was obsessed with social engineering as well as physical security. And I was more technically inclined, so I was pretty green when it came to my social interaction skills, not one of my strong suits. My employer encouraged me, though, to reach out to new clients. And I had been a customer at a specific business and always thought that their security was really impressive. And thought, man, it would be so fun to do a physical security engagement with them and do things like latch slipping and double door bypass and electronic sensors, that sort of thing. That was my jam. I didn't think in a million years it was going to turn into a social engineering engagement. I started to chat up the head of security. We were having coffee in the lobby of the building. And I told him what I did professionally. And he was asking a bunch of questions. He was actually retired NYPD, real serious guy, but super passionate about his work at the facility. I asked him if his facility had third-party security assessments. More just curious than considering it a sales pitch, you know? His answer got me excited, though. The one thing you don't want to tell a hacker in a conversation is, I don't think anyone could get in. I took that as a bit of a challenge, you know? I had the opportunity to make him an offer. I said, I'll tell you what, let me try for free. You set the rules of the engagement, and I'll find and report any gaps. If I find any issues, maybe then we can talk about a more robust engagement through my boss, something more official. And he liked the sound of free. So it was kind of off to the races. He was curious to see what I could find. He told me he'd have to chat with his managed service provider first, since they handle all the technical concerns. Totally makes sense. That's standard procedure. And then what I decided I was going to do is, while I was waiting on them, I would consider all the passive stuff. Anything that wouldn't, you know, knock on any sensitive doors or blow any windows out. I said, well, let me check their website. So employee names were up there, email addresses, phone numbers, everything was first name dot last name at their domain. So I started to dig through social media profiles. I leaned heavily on Facebook. I learned hobbies, kids' names, music preferences, things like that. Anything where if I had to impersonate somebody or pretend I knew somebody, I'd have a vague answer. Then I got the call. The MSP name flashed on my phone and I got like the dopamine rush and I was super excited. Like I said, I was green. Green is as they come. I always get pretty worked up for engagements, but this was the first time I was the principal engineer on the engagement. The MSP starts to grill me. Who am I? What do I do? Who do I work for? Standard stuff, but it felt awkward for me to be answering it. Usually a salesperson does the initial introduction. They said they talked with the head of security and physical security was off the table. Now, I'm a member of the Open Organization of Lockpickers. That was a little painful for me to hear, but the client sets the rules. So what could I do? Network layer attacks were fine. Website attacks, all good. Anything outside the building were the words used. And during business hours, the MSP and the client were in scope of the engagement. Now, this is where things get interesting. It's time for the engagement to start. I had some names, I had some emails, and I had some phone numbers, but it's a black box test, meaning I couldn't use any prior knowledge for the attack. I couldn't just call the MSP and talk to them. I had a burner phone and a Kali Linux server ready to roll. I ran Maltego, which is a data scraper, to see if I could find anything else interesting. And the first thing that popped up was the managed service provider. So they were back on the table. I thought I would try and get access to some internal email accounts first. I thought that would be a great place to start. I have to start from my office. I can't walk into the facility, so I'll start with email. From my home office, I built a phishing campaign. Hey team, our facility is being called out in this article linked below as the best at what we do. Huge kudos to everyone. We appreciate all of you. Wanted to make sure that they all felt good about themselves. I built a credential harvester with the social engineering toolkit to ask for the employee email addresses and passwords, saying it would give them access to the article. I was pretty excited about this next bit. I bought a domain that at first glance appeared to be their internal domain. I had changed a lowercase d to a lowercase b and made myself an email address with the first and last name of the CEO. So I fired off my email at 10 a.m. and then I decided I would go for a walk. I was jittery. I was nervous. I wanted to kill some of that energy and I wanted to give it time. I didn't want to just respond 2 seconds after I got an email. Almost as soon as I was walking out the door, I heard the server ding, and I thought, okay, I'll make this a quick walk because I got one. And when I returned home, I didn't get credentials, but instead I got an email from one of the employees who had clicked the email but got redirected to a help page. Help, I wanted to see this article, but I'm getting this message. It was a screenshot of an article from the MSP that had, here is our help desk number for MSP, blah, blah, blah. Please call us for any help. This link has been blocked. And I was like, crap, but wait a minute. It's still Pater. Now I have a direct phone number to the help desk line. So now I can do something. The credential harvester didn't work, but got to be persistent, right? So I gave them a call. Hello, MSP, blah, 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 help desk. Who may I ask am I speaking with? Why, hello, I'm the CEO at Anonymous Facility, John Doe, and I am having a bit of a crazy day. All right, I gave them the physical address of the facility and asked if they needed the zip code. I figured giving them something to ask me as a follow-up might make it seem as if they were giving me some sort of verifying question. I explained that I had dropped my phone and do most of my email and correspondence on it, and it shattered, so all day I have spent replacing my device and I wanted to get back to work. The technician was over the top helpful. He was fantastic. He wanted to get me rolling. I told him my phone number had changed because I didn't want to pay the full price for a new iPhone. And AT&T helped me out with a great deal. I could get a free phone with a new account. And boom, Just like that, he changed the phone number on the corporate account to reflect my burner phone. No validation required because you wouldn't want to inconvenience the CEO, right? So I'm in essentially, but I need evidence to prove that I'm in. Evidence is you know, the proof is in the pudding kind of a thing. So I said, thanks so much for your help, MSP, blah, blah, blah. You're always so great. One more thing. I need my Wi-Fi password so I can get reconnected to the staff account. Nobody seems to know it. And technician said, this is going to be my easiest call all day. A different agent is going to call you with that information shortly on your new phone number. And I hope you'll have a great day. I said, great. I hung up my phone and I thought, that's it. They're not going to call me back. They're going to be suspicious and that's that. But after 15 minutes, I got a phone call. The MSP name flashed on the caller ID. And a new technician greeted me as my new identity, the CEO, and asked if I was ready for the Wi-Fi password. I was sitting at my desk 20 minutes away from the facility, but I said, yeah, let's give it a go. All right, Mr. John Doe, your staff Wi-Fi password is STAFF_123. I said, is that uppercase or lowercase? And they're like, oh, and all uppercase staff. Great question. Thank you so much. I actually need some help with these menus. Now, I had spent a few years as an Apple iPhone call center representative. So I knew what I was doing, but I wanted to give some sort of representation of me 20 years older than myself. And I figured that was a little bit of extra acting I could get away with before I left. Well, he gave me all the steps on how to navigate an iPhone. I was rushing to my car. I thanked him, told him that he rocked, drove as fast as I could to the facility and punched in the Wi-Fi password from the parking lot. With an omnidirectional Wi-Fi antenna, I was able to actually get connected and I got a full Nmap scan. I was able to see the whole network. It was all flat. I got to see that the Dell server had an iDRAC connected. And I happen to know the default credentials for Dell iDRAC are root, lowercase, capital with an uppercase C, because I have one in my home office, and it worked. They hadn't changed the default access to the iDRAC. So I was over the moon. I'd done it. I took my screenshots, and I called the MSP, who was my point of contact, not the head of security. When I told them the whole rundown, they told me I was either lying about my engagement or I was some kind of magician. So that's how I was able to get my handle very organically.
Very nice. Yeah. That was really, really well done. And it's always so exciting, especially when you're on your first engagement, yeah, to be able to go all the way through and meet all the objectives. Because I don't know about you, when I remember being on my first one thinking, this isn't going to work. Yeah. This is so obvious. I'm going to get busted. Where you kind of forget that people are so trusting. Yeah. People aren't thinking of the negative, where in your head, you know, I'm fake. I'm not supposed to be here. So did you have some kind of thoughts all along the way? Like,
oh,
I'm
yeah,
gonna get busted right
my,
now.
My like heart was in my throat the whole time. I didn't know if I was going to start stuttering on the call or if I was going to come out as so super nervous, but you know, you are shaking. It's nerve wracking because your whole life you're told, hey, don't impersonate somebody else, don't lie, whatever. And here you are doing all those things. But at the back of your mind, if you tell yourself, I'm specifically doing this so we can improve somebody else's security, and somebody doing this for malicious purposes might have a poorer chance of going through with it.
Yeah, I think your entire storyline is incredible, because it does not require that you actually got physical on-site access. No. Sometimes if you walk into the company, they're like, well, yeah, sure, you got in, that's bad. So of course you got everything. It's like, no, what you did could be done from anywhere. Yeah. You got the credentials, which could have been done from a continent away. Granted, then you did need to get into the Wi-Fi, but I'm guessing you probably could have built that up a little bit further to eventually have gotten VPN password or something like that, which then would have let you log in from anywhere.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And IBM did something a few years back where they mailed a low power consumption machine So they did all their social engineering and they mailed a low power consumption machine to an address that was part of their lab. It was like a picture frame or something, if memory serves. And they were able to connect after their conversation by shipping a computer. It's bonkers.
Yeah, it's amazing. And one of the things that I've also noticed recently is that I've talked to so many people that do these types of social engineering engagements. And I remember when I first started talking to people, they would always seem to have like this one thing that was just luck on that day. Like if they were trying to get into a building, they were like, yeah, we checked all the doors and the back door was unlocked. So we just walked right in. I kept thinking for a while, like, these things are just lucky. And like, if you're not lucky, how are you going to get in? But you keep hearing these things over and over again to the point where I don't really think it's luck so much anymore. It seems more like it's preparation. It's being thorough with what you're looking at. And what seems to be unlucky or seems to be lucky with that unlocked door is just how it is. There are those types of vulnerabilities in there. And it seems like, you know, these stories that you have for whether it's the IBM shipping the computer or some of these other things, it happens. It's real.
I've got an uncle out of Cisco Tel Aviv. And growing up, one of the things he told me really stuck with me. He said, luck is a skill. Where if you do everything that seems to make sense leading up to something you have to do, then it's going to be easier once you get there. So luck is a skill. If you put all of your energy into, well, the thing that I need to do is going to be hard. So if I start preparing now for it, it's going to be easier down the road. And that's 100% true.
Yeah, luck just seems to often be a byproduct of preparation. Yeah. If you're prepared for this, it seems like luck falls into your lap, which then indicates that maybe it isn't luck so much. When you made those phone calls to the client, were you recording them as well so you could provide that to the client?
I really should have. The client had recorded them, which was great. Yes. So the interesting thing about that engagement, the client did not get onboarded as a customer, but the MSP did. So the MSP was so interested in what we had done that they turned around and said, well, you know, we have all these clients. We're going to recommend that they go to this company and do all the risk assessment. So it was a way bigger win than just winning the one client. And it was great news. You know, there's no downside to more testing. And all the changes, because they were under the umbrella of the MSP, all the changes were implemented at the client as well. So it was awesome. Total win.
And that's awesome if you're getting an MSP to hire your services for all of their companies.
That was fantastic.
And I would think that's going to be a great time for Dylan to revisit his contract with his employer as well.
I do miss working for them sometime, because it was neat going to a different engagement at a different company all the time. But I was able to find a good corporate gig at a Fortune 500, and now I get to hang out with my kids in the evening. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So in your story, you also talked a little bit about using Facebook to build up some information. In your experiences, what is the value of OSINT preparation for these types of engagements?
I had not really put the energy and the effort into OSINT that it deserves until I got to participate in the social engineering challenge at the SE community this year, or last year. Oh my goodness, it's January. So I realized, after kind of shrugging it off, that it's the most critical component. When I did my research, I was lucky enough to stumble upon a particular Reddit post that was huge. It was the backbone to my phone calls. And if I hadn't put literal days into OSINT, I wouldn't have found it. But the right Google dork led me to the right Reddit post that led me to the fact that everyone hates this new software. And I was able to then take that and mold it into my entire pretext.
And that fits back into our luck and preparation 100%. Again as well.
It's so crazy how critical preparation and reconnaissance is. Like, there have been instances when I was with Gold Sky where they were just like, can you get in? And I was able to say, yeah, this is how I would do it. Here's the tools I would use, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But anytime that it's a facility that is really buttoned up, it was 100% about preparation.
Just checking my notes here.
Sure.
So also when you and I were talking a little bit before this, you had mentioned that you're not the best at deducing social cues.
No, that is my biggest failing.
How does that work for a social engineer, since you would think that social cues and all that type of thing needs to be super important with reading people and to know where you are? How do you make that work?
So did you ever read Sherlock Holmes?
I actually have not, but
so
I need to.
Sherlock Holmes 100% deduces everything. And it's all through observation. There's nothing natural happening with his skill set. He takes classes. He goes to experts. He asks questions. He studies endlessly when he's not working. And when I was a kid, you know, all I wanted to do was talk to people about rockets and science and computers. And people didn't really want to do that. They wanted to start having relationships and talking about how they're feeling. And I, turns out, am a type 1 autistic. So I was 100% buried in fact and data and information. That's what got me going. And, you know, all through middle school and high school, looking back, people were trying to build relationships with me and talk to me about things. And a couple of folks I was able to connect with, but it was rare. And then in college, I get diagnosed and I start realizing, okay, well, I guess if I want to fit in, I got to figure out how to talk to people. And started to read books on interacting with people socially. And it didn't really click with me until I grabbed a book on body language. And I started realizing, okay, I can look for cues. I can look to see how somebody is receiving my conversation. You know, are their shoulders slumped? Are their shoulders straight? Are they looking down? Are they looking right at me? And then I started realizing, like, okay, people don't like too much eye contact. There's the right amount of eye contact. And just kind of falling on data to figure out how I can interact with people. And it is hard, but I have a wife and kids, so I guess I'm doing okay. But I am a bit goofy. I'm a bit awkward. But using all that skill of going by deducing things, figuring out based off of evidence how the conversation is going, how somebody is receiving my social output, if you would, that I can fall back on and say, okay, this person is totally eyes glaze over. They don't care that I want to talk about DNS. Like, it was a kind of light switch moment for me when I was able to say I can use data and information to interact with people socially.
And how much of that was also practice for you? Because I hear from some people that are in the same boat as you, where they have those same issues with not being able to read cues. And they're like, I need to get better at this. How do I do it? And one of the things that I often tell people, just go do it. Just go have conversations. And some people are like, but I want to be a great social engineer. So how do I do this? And it's like, let's start at the basics, where social engineering is really about interactions. It's about conversations. So what did you do to get better at it?
So everything is start with the bottom step and work your way up. So striking up conversations with, you know, people sitting at a library or in the food hall or wherever you are, just, hey, you know, I like blah, blah, blah that you have there. For me, I love computers. So if I saw somebody with a cool laptop, I'd be like, oh, that's a really nice laptop. What do you think about it? Can you tell me the things that are important to you about it? And maybe I'll go and get one myself because you were so good at explaining it to me. And anything that I had the slightest bit of knowledge on, I like multi-tools and boots. So if I saw somebody doing something with one of those, like, tell me about it. I want to learn from you. I want you to talk to me. And just having conversations with strangers, learning how people, you know, move their head around, move their hands around, shoulder shrugs, things like that, to act a little bit less robotic and get an idea of what would make people more comfortable. Because it wasn't about me. I was fine. I didn't care. But I wanted to have people around me be more comfortable. I didn't want them to think I was Spock. So learning how other people work just by having conversations with strangers, forcing myself out there, got me to really understand what makes other people more comfortable. My wife has been a huge help, and having kids and watching them have the same kind of understanding of the people around them has made me even better.
Yeah, and that's really difficult when you realize or when you start to think that I want to get out there, I want to have conversations with people, especially strangers. Yeah. That is like one of the scariest things to people. And I think when people take social engineering classes, and that's often one of the first things that you make them do, go have a conversation with a stranger about anything, it's difficult. I've seen some people who just quit the class because they say, nope, I can't do it. And how hard was that for you to start?
It's always nerve-wracking. It really is. If I'm walking to somebody and I know that I'm going to have a conversation about a particular topic, I mentally prep for it. And it could be something as simple as, what are we having for dinner? I've got to have like 5 items planned in my head. I've got to figure out, okay, do we even have it? Or am I going to have to go and get it? And then I have to pitch it. It's a sales pitch every conversation. It was hard for me to learn that I had to get into a specific mindset before I started to have a conversation. I couldn't just jump in. And I'm dying to take social engineering classes because I know it's going to make me not just better from a career perspective, but it's going to make me better at interacting with other people.
Yeah, and I've taken some of those social engineering classes. And one of the things that I noted was that it's probably less of a social engineering class and more of a communications class. It really teaches you how to have those interactions with people and how to be open to their kind of conversations as well. So that's really one of the big takeaways that I tell people who want to be social engineers, is focus less on that part. That's more of a niche part of communication. Yeah. So go learn how to have the conversations with people.
I get so many folks that will ping me through the app formerly known as Twitter, saying like, I want to be a hacker. You have hacker in your profile. Tell me how to hack. And I say, okay, totally. Start with networking, learn Linux, learn Microsoft, and give me a call and I will show you tools. But start at the bottom step and work your way up.
Yeah, getting the foundation is always super important. You mentioned some books in there, and I know I've heard from people that love to read books on topics. What were some of the books that you remember that was super helpful for you?
What's the title? Let me look it up on Amazon. Hadnagy's book was the first one I read. The Science of Social Engineering. Okay. And then I just binge read all of Mitnick's books. And then I started going more towards YouTube. I started realizing that if I can just watch YouTube on 2x speed while I'm doing work, I'm productive and I'm learning. And Jason Street and his approach is fantastic. It's very straightforward. It worked very well for my brain.
What's the super high level explanation of what Jason Street's way of doing it is?
If you ask him, he'll say he just goes somewhere and be adorable. just be personable and friendly and interact with people. Never shy away from something when you can approach and say, hey, you know, I'm blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm here doing today. How are you? You might get some information that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And if somebody reaches out, taps that person on the shoulder 5-10 minutes later, hey, what's this guy doing? Oh, it's that guy. He's been here. He's so nice. He's just doing this today. Don't worry about them.
Yeah, that definitely happens. And that's one of the things that I really like to do while in the middle of an engagement is to build up rapport with one person and then theoretically or potentially use them to get to the next stage.
It's huge.
Because once you've built up trust with that one person, the next one is going to be a little bit less cynical or critical of what you're trying to do.
Yeah. And if you can get a front desk worker on your side, you're in. Yeah, it's rare because they've got usually policy and procedure that they have to adhere to. But in rare instances, even just going in and saying, hey, you know, I'm here with the local internet service provider. Can I use your restroom for just a second? Just being able to have that quick 1-second interaction can sometimes set the stage for when you do walk in and you say, hey, I noticed something while I was here. Could I check out the server closet? Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, you already said who you are and who you're with. So that's fine. It's the lowball way to get yourself in.
Yep. Foot in the door.
Yeah.
You also mentioned that you're a member of the open organization of Lockpickers.
Yeah, Tool, an excellent organization.
Yeah, what is that? What do they do, and how do you involved that with some of your social engineering?
I got connected with them through Deviant Olaf's videos, which are a blast if you haven't seen them on YouTube. Deviant and then Ollam. And he's all over YouTube. He's got a whole bunch of really cool stuff that you really ought to just check out. But I met him at B-Sides Orlando. Introduced myself, said hi. You don't know who I am. I know who you are, and I know you get that a lot, and blah, 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 blah. And I just talked his ear off for like 5 minutes straight. Excuse me. And he was really receptive and interactive and sent me information and helped me out. And I was like, what can I do for you? And he was like, well, you can volunteer with Tool. And I ended up interacting with the local chapter, and I became the chapter lead. And I've since handed it off now that I have 2 kids instead of one. But I volunteer and teach people lockpicking and physical security. And I occasionally talk on it. And learning how to get myself around a facility was cool and all. But what I realized after doing it for like 6 months, the only time it would ever get fixed is if I would teach the people on site how to do it. So I used the skills that I learned teaching with Tool at Lockpick Village. And I taught the people at the facility, hey, you work in this room. Let me show you how to break into it. Here's the tool. You're going to do it. And having them break into their own facility, the risk mitigation, the rate of success was so much higher, because as soon as it became fun and they were interested and engaged, the actual resolution was way more likely. I don't know the actual numbers. It would have been fun to take that data, but it was a night and day difference in whether or not something got replaced. And we did repeat engagements where we came back the following year. And sometimes I couldn't get back into the facilities that I had broken into in 4 minutes prior.
I think that's an excellent way to do it, to let the people who work there do the break-in. Because if you just do it and you show them like, look here, I'm able to pick this lock and get through, they're probably going to say, well, yeah, sure, you're a Superman lock picker, so of course you can get through, and the average person can't. But once you hand those tools to the average person and they're able to do it, it's not something that some Superman lock picker can do anymore. The average person can do it, which makes it super scary. Yeah. And now they know we need to fix this.
Yeah. When you create the sense of urgency, not because you're saying, hey, it's scary, but because they're doing it themselves and they start to connect the dots mentally and they're like, oh, I keep my wallet on my desk when I go to lunch. And now that's just sitting there behind a door that can get latch slipped or credit card opened. Like it gets a lot more things resolved once they see the issue for themselves.
Yeah, when someone can just pick up a piece of trash and shim a door or shim a lock, that gets pretty scary with that kind of thing where you don't even need super high-tech tools to bypass some of these things as well.
It's the same reason I love when any kind of company does social engineering engagements within their company, because it's the proof is in the pudding. If you can see, holy cow, I saw a $100 Amazon card and I clicked it and it you know, I'm a security professional. I thought, oh, yeah, that I know that name. And this is for the hard work that I put into the company. And you hit it, and that button comes up and says, hey, this was part of a phishing campaign. Here's a teachable moment. Here's a 30-minute video. That's huge. It's 100% the same reason why I used to carry people with me on my physical security engagements.
Was that just so that they could also learn how things were working as well? Is that why you brought people with you?
Yeah, when I realized that issues weren't being resolved, we were doing like follow-up engagements and everything was the same. I was like, let me hear. You're the IT guy. You do all of the RFID badge cards, right? Let me show you how I can copy that to my hand because I have the dangerous things implant. I'll come back at night. And I'll use this card to get back into your building. And you don't have them. You don't have the guest badge IDs discarded at the end of every day or every 3 months or ever. And yeah, I can come back when you're not here and grab whatever I want. And, you know, your laptop looks nice. So it gets people thinking when you take them with you. I can do this. Somebody else could easily do this. It's not that hard once you've seen it done.
And I think that's also an issue that some people will think about in terms of if we are showing the secrets and all the magic from the magician, how these things work, are we worried that it's going to kind of devalue the work that we're doing in terms of we're not really the experts anymore if we can show somebody how all of these things work in 2 minutes.
I think that comes down to the ethos of why professional hackers do what we do. If we completely demystify this, take all the magic out of the equation, and let everybody understand how easy this can be, then maybe it'll get mitigated.
And that's the goal.
Yeah.
Now, you briefly mentioned something there a minute or so ago, which I don't know that everybody knows about. You mentioned an implant in your hand. So that's literally some little device that you have under your skin that you can then clone a badge onto. And then you can do like a Jedi trick where you just like wave your hand with nothing in your hand and get in through a badge scanner. Is that something, the good way to describe it?
If I can get a badge first and copy it, yes.
That's crazy.
So I have one chip that has two frequencies, NFC and RFID. RFID, of course, is the little white badges that your company gives you to get into specific locations or sometimes anywhere on property. And I can copy that if I get within about a meter and copy it to my hand or a spare card. Not everyone on my team had one. I was the only one with an implant, so I would make cards for everybody else that wasn't, that was maybe a little bit squeamish to have the needle in their hand. But the other thing that I think is even more useful is the NFC. So that's, anyone has seen that, you touch your credit card to, you know, the gas pump and you can pay, which is great. I can program it right now. Right now it takes people to my website with my contact information. But more than that, it's also a fast redirect honey token, a canary honey token that takes someone's IP address and emails it to me. So then I can use that as a teachable moment. Like, hey, you just scanned my hand, which is my business card. You got all my contact information. Now I want to show you something. Here's your phone. You know, it's got iPhone, Android, resolution and browser type. And here's your IP address. Now, if I really wanted to, from a technical standpoint, I could attack your device specifically from its public-facing internet connection. And it gets people thinking about, boy, I shouldn't tap my phone on.
That certainly starts getting things a little bit scary for people. Now, does that also work for like hotel rooms? Can you just kind of wave your hand in front of the door and get into a hotel room?
So some yes, some no. In some scenarios, I've been unable to copy certain keys. My Flipper Zero has been huge in cracking those keys. And then I can write it to my hand after the fact. I've been on a cruise where I was able to use it. I've been in hotels where the turnover staff put a badge on a cart. And just for curiosity's sake, I copied their badge and I was able to open my door with it. So supposedly, if I wanted to, I could go door to door and open it. So just being more careful with those cards is so important. Having the something you have token exposed over the air like that is kind of crazy.
And that would be a whole lot of fun just in front of the cleaning crew, just to wave your hand in front of the door and have it unlock.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I often like to ask guests is we get a lot of people listening to this that are trying to break into the industry. And you mentioned at the beginning or somewhere in the middle there about the advice that you usually give to people on becoming into the field. What other kind of advice would you give to somebody who wants to be a social engineer?
Gosh, YouTube University. Just look up this social engineering on YouTube and then slowly pick your jaw up off the ground. There's endless content. Go to events. Some of them are free for students. B-Sides Orlando is one that I'm at every year without fail. I also go to DEF CON. I'm going to try and make it to more this year. I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to bring my oldest with me to these events now so he can get exposure. If he wants to get into it, you know, there isn't a too early to start learning about this stuff. But just talk to people. I'm more than willing to answer questions. And if I can't come up with an answer, I will find somebody who can answer it for you. I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook. Just message me and I'll help people. I don't mind. I love doing it. It's something that I think is more important than actually doing my job, is making sure that other people are going to do it when I stop doing it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's great that you brought up the idea of people networking, that seems to be one of the most valuable things. Yeah. Like, you obviously need to have the skills, but then people will often say, well, I have the degree, I get these certifications, I still can't get a job. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's because they haven't done the people networking. They haven't gone to events. They haven't gotten their name out there and just talk to people and say, here I am, here's what I can do.
I got my job today, not because I had the right degree. My degree is in psychology. Or I had the right experience. I was new-ish. I had done the job, but I needed a foot in the door at a big company. And I got introduced through somebody I know. And it's too valuable to not go to events, even if they're like $50, $100. Just being able to get through that door and start talking to people. And it's, again, going back to talking to strangers and saying, hey, you've got a book that says Linux, and I just started learning Linux, and tell me about Linux.
Yeah, I think my last four jobs have all been because I knew people. Now, like you said, you got your job by talking to people. And I think one of the things I'd want to emphasize there is you didn't get your job without being qualified for the job.
You also knew people that were in there that knew you were qualified. And those are the types of things that can help you to get those jobs.
The people out there looking for work almost never are unqualified. You have to both be able to do the work and be able to knock on the right door. It's that luck is a skill thing. Again, being able to say, you know, I know 7,000 people or something crazy in my LinkedIn. I need one person to point me in the right direction. If you increase the opportunity, then when the time comes and you need to find that right door to knock on, you can kind of put your message out into the ether like, hey, I'm looking for this kind of job. Is anybody else in need of this kind of skill set? Here's what I do. Here's how I've been doing it. And even if that answer is, I've been playing with Linux for 5 years in my own home lab, cool. Let's have a conversation to make sure that you really know what you're doing, and then maybe I'll give you the reins.
Yeah, cold calling just doesn't really seem to work. That seemed to be a one in a million. You basically have to have the networking set. Dylan, so how can people get in touch with you? Or are there any kind of conference presentations, anything like that, that you're giving? If somebody wants to reach out, how do they do that?
So I am on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I am on Twitter at 31337magician, Dylan Backler on LinkedIn and Facebook. But I'm on LinkedIn so much more than Facebook these days. And my website is themagician.tech, T-E-C-H, and that has like a direct email if you just want to email me something. But I'm like in the weird generation right before social engineering, social networking became normal. So I'm like trying to use Twitter as much as possible, even though I feel like a dinosaur on it. But reach out to me. Ask me questions. And like I said before, if I can't come up with an answer, if it's something way out of my wheelhouse, I will find somebody in my network that has answers for you and direct you to them. We are a community that loves to talk shop. Yes, we're mostly introverts. That much is true. But from our home computer desk, we're going to talk about computer stuff, and we're going to be happy to do it.
Absolutely. So, Dylan the Magician, thank you so much for joining us on this Layer 8 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Layer 8 podcast. Check back every 2 weeks for a new episode talking about OSINT and social engineering. If you have pen test or social engineering needs, Compass CyberGuard can help. Get more information by emailing info@layer8podcast.org.